Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Talk to Danielle podcast. I am your host, Danielle C. Baker. And before we get started, be sure to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening and watching from. And we are in season three, so I do invite you to have a look at the last two seasons. I'm sure there's some topics there that may resonate with you. So go have a look at that, and I'm sure you'll find something there that you're going through right now that will help you a lot. And today I have an amazing guest. I say that to all my guests, but this one is very dear to my heart. I'm really excited to have her on because we got to connect quite a bit lately, and I just love the work that she does. I have the lovely Vivian Meraki with me today. We're going to be talking a lot. She does work with parenting through divorce with an amazing book that just came out and made the number one bestseller. You'll get to see her everywhere. So we're going to put the spotlight on her right away, but I'm really excited to have you on. Thank you so much, Vivian, for coming on.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Before we get started with everything that you do, because you've been really busy these last few months, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah. So something that I often say is that the work that I do was born out of the place of pain, actually. I started my healing journey decades ago when I lost my dad to cancer. And that started me on a path of a lot of self-discovery, moving away from what I grew up with, which was that you have to self-sacrifice in order to show love. Action, not words, right? I now subscribe to a way of love, which is words and actions in alignment for ourselves and honoring of other people. And then later on, as I went through my own process, I came to a point where I realized that I was starting to self-sacrifice in ways that I hadn't really noticed in my career, in my marriage, and in a lot of the way that I was living my life. And so I made some really big dramatic changes. Not everyone, I believe, needs to make that type of change. But in my path, I walked away from my 20-plus career in corporate. I used to be a marketer. I worked for the United Nations. I worked for a lot of health tech companies, social impact companies, Fortune 500s, So I've kind of been through a whole realm of different types of organizations. And I loved what I did. I wanted to do what I did in the very beginning because I wanted to support from behind the scenes companies that were doing really great work and had a lot of social impact. But what I later realized that as a marketer, there's only so much that I can do. And I felt called to move into a space where I could help support people more directly and have more meaningful change. And so I shifted into coaching. I ended up getting certified and trained in somatic coaching as well as trauma integrative strategies. And so now I work with families who are also unfortunately going through divorce. The work that I did, I definitely never, even as I went into coaching, I never expected to move into focus on working with families going through divorce. But for me, it was seeing what happened in our family. Even though we tried to be as mindful as we could, our children still went through a lot. And that crippling anxiety, I'll never forget it, that was evident in them as we were going through and the transitions between households. It was a real lack of resources at the time. And that led me to write my book and then eventually start to focus my practice down into what I do now.
Yeah, there is. It's funny how, I mean, there's a lot on divorce, but to actually, when you kind of dig down into how do I navigate this while I'm going through my stuff and trying to keep sane and trying to keep my kids sane in the process, there's not a lot out there. And this is what I appreciate. And I like the fact that you mentioned also that you never thought you'd niche down, because this is a term we hear so much about niching down, but I just love how it just organically falls into place after a while when you start working and you realize this is where I need to be. One thing that you do mention a lot, and in your book, I don't have the copy with me. I'm just not
That's
having
okay.
it.
I have
you
it.
Gotta put it up. There it is. That's right.
There it is. Yeah.
That's the one. The amazing. I love that book. It is really an amazing tool and just for everybody. But you do mention a lot about the burnout, parenting burnout, especially when it comes to divorce, and you talk about self-sacrifices. So can you give us some examples of what parental burnout looks like when we're going through a divorce or separation or even any kind of hard time? Because we know about professional burnout or anything like that, but there's some hidden signs there that we may not be attuned to. Can you kind of give us some examples of what that looked like?
Yeah. So when I think of burnout, I think of it in two ways. On the one hand, it can be really quiet. It can be something that you don't notice, like you said, moments where you, the things that you used to really like to do, you have a hard time doing, where you just feel really tired. You start losing energy and enthusiasm for things. The way it showed up for me, that was definitely a big part of it, but also just kind of an inability to hold it all together and make sense of everything. Kind of almost getting confused in the moment or forgetting things, like a lot of that. And just not really feeling like story time, not really feeling like the hugs, not really feeling like a lot of the things that used to build a lot of connection and the things that I looked forward to doing. So that's how it showed up in me. And I think that shows up a lot in pa other parents as well. And then there's the other side of burnout, which looks the opposite. And I think this is partly why burnout is so hard to identify. And the way it can look like in the opposite is kind of the overperformance, where we are doing all the things and we're always on the go and we are organizing, like all the different calendars and to a level of busyness and coordination that in my mind, it actually looks like control. It's like I feel so out of control. I need to control. And because I'm feeling so exhausted that if I even slow down like the Roadrunner, I might just collapse. So we're just gonna keep going on this train. So I think like those are the two sides of burnout and how it can show up and why it can also be really hard to identify.
I like that. Yeah, because it's what I like to call the super mom or the super dad, where you're just doing everything. Yeah, and it's so interesting because I noticed when I was going through mine, I was going through that scheduling every single minute that we possibly had that was supposed to be free, but switching over to the other side, and all of a sudden I was struggling to keep my word, saying, oh, this weekend we're going to go do this, and then it's like, I'm too tired for this now. And it would bother me because the kids were always looking forward to these activities, but I couldn't keep them up. That's when I realized I hadn't noticed it before until I hit that other side where it's just like, I can't do this anymore. So, yeah. And then it's just the way that you present it as well is just so human, like it happens. And so it's what I really appreciated. You also talk about psychological safety for our children, because we are so concerned with our children to say we don't want it's hard, they're going through some stuff already, we don't want to make it worse, but then you're going through your stuff as well. So can you kind of how could parents what can they do to make sure that they are still providing psychological safety for their children, depending on what that separation and divorce is looking like for them?
So I talk about psychological safety. I'm really glad you brought this up because I consider this probably one of the biggest foundations for families, all families, not just families going through divorce, but particularly for families going through divorce or grief or loss or something big like that. And what is, from my perspective in relation to safety, it's we all think about safety in terms of, oh, like, do they have enough to eat? Are they safe in their home? Are they going to get hurt? And those are important things. But then there's this other part, which is around the emotional and psychological side of things, which is, how open do they feel in being a bit messy, in showing their emotions, in talking about their feelings? And as a culture, we're not very good at holding those kinds of feelings because we get uncomfortable. We're not comfortable with the discomfort of what it feels like even for us, to hold that with our children. And so sometimes we'll say things like, oh, it's okay, or you're fine, or let me see that happy face. Like we can smile through adversity. We don't say adversity, we say something hard, like something different. Like we might say, let me see that smile through tough things, or right? Like we implicitly imply that it's not okay to have some of those, what we label as those negative emotions. And at the heart of it, my belief is that psychological safety comes from the safety to just be, the safety to have the whole spectrum of feelings. And a lot of times as parents, we are actually unintentionally eroding that emotional and psychological safety right out from under our children. And like I said, it's unintentional. We don't know, especially because a lot of things that we were taught as kids and parents, we are passing down because that's how it was always done. And so it's about the mindfulness and the awareness. And I think that's ultimately at the heart of it. So some of the things that we can do is things like, this is going to sound really obvious, but it's hard. Simple, but hard. And most of the hardest things are so simple. But things like letting them talk, not filling it in. giving the space for them to, where you're not already formulating your response and the advice and what you're about to say, but just let them finish, asking open-ended questions. I always lean into questions that start with what instead of why, because why starts to get into judgment. Why did that happen? Why did that break? Why did you do that? As opposed to what? What happened? What do you feel because that happened? What led to that happening? Now we're describing, we're not answering this big why. And that can also help to support psychological safety. Another really big one is around unsolicited advice. And this might sound weird to parents, especially because, as we're working sometimes with our children and they can be younger, that we think, well, of course, like we're meant to guide them as parents. We absolutely are. That is true. And I completely subscribe to that. But just adding one tiny nuance where we're asking first, do you mind if I give you my opinion? Would you like to know what I think? That can create such a huge shift in the dynamic in allowing our children to feel like they've got agency to choose for themselves what they desire and want. And it makes a really big difference for them to feel safe enough to say yes or no. And obviously, we need to respect what they have to say. So if they say not right now, we got to swallow it. Maybe later, then okay, maybe later. Notice how hard it is to swallow, and what does that mean for us? And I think that's part of the work is a self-awareness for us, and not to take what they say and what they do personally, because it's not.
Yes, that is really hard. You're giving us some gold there because, like you said, it sounds so simple when we're talking about it, but when you're living through it, and what you're saying to keep that safety with your children is what we are burying very deep down because we are covering up how we really feel to help our children. So we're not sharing those true emotions, and if somebody would, push us to talk about our feelings when we weren't ready, we'd also be upset. So it's hard to not take it personally. You want to help your children so much that sometimes you realize that helping is to take a step back and let them kind of digest all of that. Not easy. But
Not
I'm
easy. Not
glad you
easy.
share that. Yeah, it sounds so simple, but it's not. It makes a world of difference to our children. So I do appreciate that. There's another thing that you talk about, and I think, honestly, I think you're one of the first people that I know that I've worked with that shows both sides. Because now we're going to be talking about those transition days when we're going to the other parent and coming back. I work with a lot of families who deal with quite, at least 1 or 2 days of a bit of chaos, depending on what the situation is or the dynamic is between the two co-parents. But you talk about, you give some advice for parents on how to deal or how to make it easier on those transition days, but not just for the parents. When you have a child that doesn't want to go back to the other parent's house, and it's how do you do that without sounding like the bad guy? But also, you have advice for parents when you are the parent that the children don't want to go back to the house and what to do with that. So I think that's so wholesome to say, okay, I'm going to help both sides because we don't, the children love both their parents, so let's help both sides. So what advice would you have for the parent that in the situation where the kids don't want to go back to your house, or the parent who has to convince their children that they need to go back to the other house? So how do you navigate that?
Yeah, this is such a tricky one. It's a common one. I hear it all the time. And so, first of all, I think that it's important to say that every household and every relationship and co-parenting situation is different and unique. There are some cases where the child actually may not feel safe at the other house, where part of the reason for the divorce is you as a parent did not feel safe at the other house. And there may be abuse and manipulation happening there. So, first of all, I just want to call that out, that in those particular cases, it's even more difficult. And then and then all of that, it's even more important to work with your child around the psychological safety. I talk about my three keys in my book and how to build those unshakable bonds. And a lot of those strategies and tactics that I talk about are actually ways to help fortify and defend your child. It's not going to protect them entirely because they're children. Children can't protect themselves, but it is going to bolster them up that they know what they know and to trust themselves and to help to temper the manipulation that might be happening. So, first of all, I just want to call that out. In those scenarios, it's harder and it's going to be even harder to navigate because you're likely going to know why your child doesn't want to go back and you don't know what to do. So first of all, that scenario is needs to be dealt with even more sensitively. But what I'm going to talk about is the more the other scenarios where both co-parents want the best for their children, average people, not necessarily, that type of toxicity or abuse or manipulation. And in those circumstances, your children may still say, I don't want to go back, or I want to stay, I want to stay here, or you're the one on the receiving end, like I want to go back to my other parents' house, right? Like, and that can be kind of difficult. So first I'll talk about the parent that hears, I don't want to leave. I don't want to go back. And in those situations, there's a couple things that I suggest. So it really depends on the child, the context of what's been happening. And sometimes, on one end of the spectrum, there may be an opportunity for a conversation with the other co-parent where you share. It's like, oh, we're having a particularly hard transition day. Do you mind if we extend, that window a little bit more to help support the transition? So maybe it's an extra night. In on one end of the spectrum. Maybe it's, oh, maybe I can see if I can help and support some of the transition by coming to drop off to say a hello, so that it's not, I'm just leaving in the morning, depending on what your transition looks like. So like in my case, what I'm assuming here, is a circumstance if you're doing a transition day through a school day, for example, or if on a weekend and it's like a pickup, that there's that additional time, basically. Like we're trying to kind of lengthen and slow down the transition. At the heart of it, that is the idea for all the transition days, is we slow it down and we try to lengthen it for your child so that it gives them more of an opportunity to adjust. So I think that is one potential solution. And then that may not always be possible. It depends on your circumstance, co-parent, your schedule, all that. And then the other aspect that I also talk about is how you talk with your child. So as you're talking to them, what comes up for you? What makes it hard to go? And oftentimes they may say something like, I really miss you. And they still love the other parent, but they're just anticipating that they're not going to see you for a while. Okay, like let's talk about what that looks like, right? Like let's talk about what it feels like to miss someone and just hold it. Like we don't have to fix it. And I think that's the most important advice that I would say to parents is you don't need to fix it. You don't need to try to fix it. In fact, I would advise against trying to fix it because now you're suggesting that there's something wrong with your child's feeling. Instead, that is hard. I have a hard time too. I'm going to miss you a lot as well. I never stop thinking about you. And then the strategies for the space and time when you're apart. So it might be some of those sensory touchable objects. It might be a stuffy. My children, I wove bracelets for them, or there might be a beaded necklace for one of my children. So they will take an object from my home that they take with them for the rest of the week that it reminds them of mommy. So there's those things. We use essential oils and scents sometimes that they can smell. So it also brings them back and helps them to kind of relax and remember. Some people use photos. And then the other thing that I often will do is also just what are the key touch points with your children? And just kind of look at that and think about what makes sense and how in those moments where it's tougher, maybe you increase the frequency a little bit. So maybe, okay, well, I'm going to give you a call later. Or leaving voice notes. So I leave my children voice notes. I have my children set up on private Discord servers, which is only the family. And that way, because we don't have phones for our children or phone plans, they're pretty young. So that's the way that we've gotten around it. And it's private. So, no one else can come in. But basically, in those situations, they can call anytime they want. So, one, they feel like if I really need you, I can. And then, secondly, I'm going to leave you a voice note, even if you can't, but you can pick up on it. You can hear my voice. You can hear the thing that I have to say. And I noticed that that really helps to ease. And it also has helped some of my clients as well to ease some of that transition. So, everything from, whether I can actually adjust the schedule all the way through to supporting, the in-between days, lengthening, sorry, I can't speak, lengthening the perception of kind of around that time. Just slowing down to their pace. And then the last thing that also I do is I also talk to them about what do you like about going to the other place? What are you looking forward to, on the other hand, about going to the other place? What's one thing that you think is going to be really exciting? And is there, and then on the flip side, are there things that you're not looking forward to, right? Like, so you're kind of balancing out on the two sides. So having those conversations and that it's okay. The things they're looking forward to helps them with the transition. And then on the flip side, the things that, they may not be having as easy in a time on, you can talk through it with them and that they feel that they've got that support. So that's on the one end of the spectrum. And then on the other hand, for the parent that's receiving the children, I think the most important thing is to not take it personally. I actually think that the worst thing that you can do is to take it personally, because then you're going to feel agitated. Then you're probably going to feel a bit activated and triggered. You're going to feel like it's a rejection. They don't like me. They don't love me. And then all of a sudden, like probably some old child wounds are coming up for yourself that then you end up projecting on your own child. That's common. No judgment. Like we are often doing that. We're not even intentional or aware of it. But once we start to shine a light and become more aware of it, that that's something that is coming up, then we can have choice. Then we can do something about it. And then we go, oh, it's not personal. They still love me. It's just they're having a hard time. It's a transition. And so in those moments, it's everything but in reverse. Basically, like, are you able to allow for a little more time? How do you slow down the transition day and receiving them? How do you kind of give honor to the other parents? Like, oh, like, do you have the thing that you can remind you of your mommy or your daddy? Would you like to have a call with them later? It's all those things, but in reverse. And just holding space, I think, and recognizing that transition days are hard. And something that I will say to my children is, it's a transition day. Transition days are hard. And what we're doing when we say that is we're permissioning them to feel okay about not being okay because it's a hard time of transition.
Right. No, it's not a question of what's wrong with me for not being able to go through this transition. I like that. And it's so important that you mentioned that for the parents who's receiving the children and they don't want to come, when you don't take it personally, your child is telling you where you can make some changes, that would make them want to come. And I think that's also a good thing, and not to take it personally. You're really us giving us gold on this. I like the idea of exploring, because this is one thing that I worked with a lot of the families, is the parents that where the children are saying, "I want to stay with you," would often look for what's happening over there that they don't want to. They would automatically go to, "My child is not loved at the other parent's house," and that is not the case. And I mean, there's not one parent out there who says, "I don't love my children." So it's to say, well, what's over there that's really fun? What's, to kind of bring the positive instead of jumping straight to the negative, I think makes a huge impact on the child. I think you've mentioned on one of your posts as well to say you need to allow your child to love the other parents, So I think that's also very powerful. You don't have to fix everything, and the parent and the child is allowed to love both parents. We need to, we really need to take that into consideration. Our issue with the co-parent is not our child's issue, and we shouldn't make it. I've noticed that working with children, mostly children always think it's their fault that their parents are not together. So trying to make them, heard and seen, and tell them that it's normal to feel a bit overwhelmed with transition days, it just helps them understand that just because the parents aren't together, we still love you. You're still loved. You're still cherished. You're still so important. I could talk to you all day. I don't know if you wanted to add something to that, but I could talk to you all day. But I want to get into the book, because that's really at the core of it's such a like it's a guide, it's a tool, it's a like the Swiss Army knife of how to handle this. Can you talk to us about your book and what's going on with it now? I'd love to hear more.
So this book was written during and after the period that my children were going through peak anxiety. So, we had navigated the divorce. We actually were trying to be very mindful. We cohabited for actually a number of years. And during that time, the children were doing really well. We had a lot of conversations with them, adjustments, everything. We thought, great, it's tickety-boo. At least that's what I thought. I knew that me moving out of the matrimonial home would be hard, but I didn't anticipate how hard because they'd been doing so well. And it was that moment that as I moved out, We happened to have a few events that were leading up to it around that time that gave this impression to my son that, oh, bad things can happen. Bad things can p happen to people and animals and, like the community that we really love. And maybe that might happen to mommy. And so those connections and the threads came together, and that peaked a high stress, high anxiety situation for him, where basically he could not let me out of his line of sight. He was so scared that something would happen, and it was panic. And then later in my daughter, about 6 months later, same thing happened with her. And in those times, I'd never seen that kind of anxiety for my children before. I think what was really hard for me too was not to think, like as we said, children sometimes will blame themselves. They think, oh, it's my fault that my parents aren't together. We as parents can do that too. It's, oh, it's my fault that I caused this strain and anxiety on my children because of choices I've made, because of the divorce. There was a moment where I was wondering, like, did I make the right decision? Just to watch them go through that. And anyway, but going through that, and I'm someone that really subscribes to therapy and self-work. I really believe in it. And so we signed up our children to child therapy. And it was great and was really supportive. At the same time, I felt like therapy is only 50 minutes a week. So what about the other minutes of the week? What do we do, right? Like, there's got to be more. And so I ended up leaning back on my own somatic practice as a coach. I started to bring that into my practice with my children. I noticed a real shift, and that is really what where the book was born out of, was the shift that started to happen and then continued to happen and then continued to grow. It's actually really interesting we're talking today, because I was speaking to another parent on the way back after school drop off this morning. And that parent said to me that her child, who's in my daughter's class, said, was explaining that there was a situation with another child, and there was some hitting and, a lot of dysregulation that in that particular moment. And that child felt really concerned and worried and activated himself. Not their words, my words, obviously.
You're right.
And so the mother was trying to explain, oh, like that can happen. A lot of people have a hard time, controlling their feelings, or expressing their feelings in a way that might feel good for other people, and so they might act out, right? And everyone, even adults, sometimes go through this. And then the child said, "Yeah, but not." And then he said the name of my daughter, and I was really, really surprised. Anyway, I just share that because I think this work can be so powerful in helping the children anchor to, what am I feeling? It's okay to feel that way. And then exploring that feeling. And then as you explore it, what they noticed, my children, when I do this work with them, oh, it feels lighter. I'm releasing it. And I no longer feel so weighted down. And the example that I give as a metaphor is, it's when they're looking to me for attention. Mama, mama, I want to show you something. Mama, I need something. Mama, right? If I ignore you, what happens? Oh, it doesn't feel so good. No, it doesn't feel so good. But does the thing that you want to tell me, or your need to tell me, or your need to connect with me go away? No, it's still there. So our feelings are kind of like that, where they kind of sit in us, and they are signals to us about something that's bigger that's going on. They're neutral. I know they don't feel neutral. Anger, rage, sadness, grief, those are not neutral feelings, but they're not neutral because of the meaning that they have for us. But the actual emotions are neutral in the sense that they're here as a signal. They're not trying to do anything to us. So I talk about that in the book. And so that's really where this book came out of, was that gap in time where I felt like I went through so many articles and podcasts and books, and I couldn't find anything to support me, like you were saying at the top of our time together here. There are so many resources for parents. There are so many resources around divorce, but there's not a lot of resources around this specific area, which is around the emotional, physiological, and some of the psychological side of things, in terms of how do we help ease that anxiety? How do we, like, it's not entirely about prevention, but some of it is preventative. Some of it is a dampening. Some of it is supportive and, helping. Basically, how do we help our children through that really hard time? And how do we help them in a way that I don't need to be a therapist myself to do it? There are therapists, of course, to sign them up. And they do amazing work. But and also even as therapists, this is a bit of a side note, but as a therapist, you can't really treat your own children anyway. So like, how do
It
I,
doesn't work.
right? Anyway, so I know
It
I'm
doesn't
digressing a
work.
little bit.
No, I do the same thing. The things that I do with other families and their children, I can't do with my own. Like I just, they don't, they think I don't know what I'm talking about to begin with, but we're not in the same dynamic. We're so invested and attached to the situation that yeah, it is and you don't want to be the therapist. You want to be the parent.
You
You
want to
know,
be the
like
parent. Yes.
you want to have that time as a parent with your children, and it's so important. You brought a very important point. I'm going to have you back another time because this will be a whole other topic, but cohabitation. This is such a common, we see it more post 2020,
Yes.
with situations where parents can't physically separate because of the market and everything that's gone on. So there's that cohabitation. I can't speak either. Of having to live with the co-parent in the same space for an undetermined amount of time. And I'll even add to that because we think that as the kids get older, they would understand, but they really don't. From my experience, having gone through it with a separation is, I thought they would be okay that they would understand, but no, but at least they were at the age where they could express it and say, "Listen, this is all we've known. You've had a life before you got married, so no, life goes on, but for us, that's all we know." So it was interesting to get that side, and like you say, it kind of hits you a little bit. It hurts the ego to say, "Ah, oh, I thought I was doing a good thing here," but no, it's this. They still need that time to process those emotions and to have that, to hold that space for them, to be able to figure that out for them. So it's so important. I digress as well, but yeah, it's so important to that's what I love about the book is you give a realistic view. And I also, this is the part that I like, because this kind of parenting, this way of parenting was given a lot of heat in the beginning from especially the older generations, where they were just like, "Oh, the kids are too soft for this and this," but now we are seeing the results in the children, and this is where I get excited, is seeing tangible evidence that the children, we're changing the mindset of the next generation, and they are self-regulating a lot better than most adults lately. So it's beautiful to see that the work that's been done so far, or the work that we're doing, we now see what that's going to look like in the future, which is so so empowering. So I appreciate that book, and if you can show
Oh,
the
thank
cover again,
you.
because I don't
Oh,
have
yeah,
it
I will.
in arm's
It's
reach, but
okay. Parenting through divorce, the three keys to building unshakable bonds with your children.
I love it.
And what I try to do with the book is it's a lot of the book includes stories and conversations that are real conversations I had with my children. Some of my early readers were had shared back with me and said, "Oh, like, do children talk like this?" They do if you talk to them like that. Like that's actually something that it's so interesting because all of the teachers that had been exposed to my children and caregivers, like they were always very surprised by the way my children talked because they were a bit more, even now, more mature than the normal child for their age. But that's because that's how I talk to them. And that's how my co-parent talks to them as well. Like he's never talked to them in a way where, like talk like baby talk, but we talk to them as people. And we explain concepts age appropriately, of course, but as people. And then in my case, like I actually teach them the vocabulary and all of that around their feelings and emotions. And what's beautiful about this is that this type of parenting in bringing in the somatics, you're working with their nervous system. You're working with your own nervous system and you're working with their nervous system. And it's very natural. And that's why it's not therapy. It's very much about allowing them to understand and become aware of themselves and what they're feeling more. And if you create the space for them to be aware, explore, and then understand and not have judgment in there, that's safety. And then they're actually able to feel safe with themselves, that it's okay to have those feelings. And then the anxiety very naturally starts to dissipate because when you start to empower them that you have control, you have choices, you have the awareness, you decide what you want to do with this, then all of a sudden they don't need to be so anxious about that feeling coming up because they know exactly what they want to do. And oftentimes, as you start doing the work as well, you'll start modeling it for them as well,
Yeah.
which is beautiful. It's healing for
It is.
yourself and for your child. Yeah.
That's the thing. You're healing yourself and the child, which I think is very so nice to see that, you're not sacrificing yourself for your child. It's kind of helping you at the same time. You have another thing too. I forgot. I wanted to bring that up to you. You have this thing with your children where you say you're the expert. Can
Yeah.
you kind of talk a little, because I think that would be a great tool for parents as well to kind of switch how the conversation goes. So can you tell us a little bit
Yeah.
about that?
Yeah, I'd love to. I'm actually going to bring up two tools because I think both of them are just as potent and they kind of go together. They're both in the book as well in more detail. But I'm the expert is this exercise that I do with my children where it came out of a place where there's sometimes question in terms of, whether they're actually feeling a certain way and then noticing if gaslighting is happening from adults in their life. So both exercises came from that place. With I'm the expert, it's this idea that they're the expert of them, their feelings, and their body, and that no one is more of an expert than they are about them. I know that was a mouthful. And so it starts from this place of, who knows if you've got an itchy elbow, Oh, does mommy know? Does your teacher know? Does, your grandfather know? Right? Like we've got kind of go through the different people. It's like, oh no, oh, you know, because you can feel it. Oh, because I can't feel. Oh, interesting. I can't feel it. And we go through. It's like, oh, who can tell you if you have a headache or if you are hungry or if you're feeling sad? And then that's where you start getting into this territory of, oh, so, we're building up the repetition and we're building up the strengthening of this idea that I know when I've got an itchy elbow, when I have a headache, a sore throat, when I'm hungry, when I'm sad, which also means that if someone says, you're not sad or you're not okay, and there was actually a situation where something like that happened where my daughter fell, she hurt her knee, and a substitute teacher came in and said, oh, you're fine. It's not hurt because there's no bleeding. And she came home, she felt really sad, and we talked about it. It's like, so who's the expert of you? Right? Were you hurt? Yes. Okay. Right? Like that's what matters is you were hurt. Someone tried to tell you you weren't hurt. And she felt so much validation being able to lean into that practice where she knew it wasn't right, but then she just wanted that validation from me when she came home. And then the moment that we had that conversation, she was actually fine again, but she needed the validation. So we as parents, I often say, we are actually the best tool for our children, our nervous system, but also as a validation that we are the ones that teach our children that they can trust themselves, but also that they can trust us. And that trusting us part is that we are validating for them. And then not true is in a very similar vein where we talk about just because someone is an adult does not mean that everything they say is true. And it's similar. Like there's all the, different renditions of that, and you can swap in, whatever those sayings might be. Like, what if someone says that you are, whatever, fill in the blank. And you do that exercise with the children. I've been doing it with my daughter since she was 3 and my son since he was 6. And my son's now got to a point, he's 10 now. And he's now got to the point where he's actually able to emotionally purge and differentiate the emotions coming at him from other people, adults included. And it doesn't faze him. So he's like, oh, it's not my problem that they feel that way or that they spoke to me in that way because he's become so firm in himself. So I talk about unshakable bonds and unshakable parenting. Ultimately, that's where we're getting to is this idea that we don't need the external validation and these external influences matter less and less to us.
That is incredible to hear that a 10-year-old can differentiate. This is a you problem. That's not a
Yeah.
me problem.
That's a
Whereas,
you problem.
yeah, exactly. That's impressive because I do that. I'm in that line of work, and sometimes I'm still questioning, is that mine? Like, is this my
Yeah.
energy, or is that somebody else I just kind of picked up on? So that is amazing. That's what I love about the I'm the expert, and I can lead into, because I do a lot of work with, who are the safe adults and, the tricky adults. And so that can kind of be transferable to that as well later on, is say if you're not feeling comfortable around somebody, that you can't have somebody tell you, oh, don't worry, don't be
Yeah.
silly, give your auntie a hug, she wants a hug, So again,
Right?
it's that safety that you want to
It's the
create for your children.
safety. Yeah. And that you've
I
got their
love
back. And it also supports in situations where, unfortunately, if there is a situation of grooming that can happen, these types of exercises and practices protect the children. At least it validates that they can follow the red flags, as in
Yes.
they pay attention to the red flags and they tell you about them, that there's no secrets, that there's no shame, that they don't need to hide or suppress their feelings in favor of someone else's comfort, because we're supposed to listen, because we're supposed to, respect authority. Those, of course, there's respect. Like, this is not a like, I'm not suggesting that, oh, like we we're disrespecting people or any of that, but it's
No,
about
no, no, no.
honoring ourselves at the
That's right.
heart of it. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's about are they respecting me? You know,
Yes.
so yeah,
Yes.
exactly. No, I like that. I really like that. I could talk to you all day about this, but I'm gonna, before we wrap up, is there anything you know? Just to give a context, those who follow us know, I mean, we just recently been on Speaker Slam with the power of no speeches. So you are doing so much right now. So I'm gonna ask what's coming up with, are you any projects? But I invite everybody to follow Vivian on social media. She's doing morning breakfast shows. She's on TV. She's in magazines. She's writing articles. It is amazing. Just beautiful to watch you. So, what's coming up next? What have you got going on now?
Yeah, so I'm going to be speaking at a number of women's conferences coming up. I'm also bringing back my blog. So I used to have a blog resource. So I'm launching that along with my newsletter. So just having, more regular touch points with people that follow me. I actually recently launched a program called Unshakable You. So Unshakable You actually used to be my original program before I started leaning into divorce for people who were looking for transformation and healing. But I've reframed it now. So this program's targeted a lot more, tailored, I should say, for people who are adults, who are adult children of divorce. And it's been really
Okay.
powerful to help them to unlock a lot of what happened with them when they were
Wow.
children, a lot of that blame and the shame, and rewriting that for themselves and the futures that they want to design for themselves. So that's another program. And then I'll be launching some workshops, been thinking about a retreat. So there's a lot on the go, but some of those other ideas are the retreat's probably a 2026 thing. But in person, families with their children can come in for that connection, healing, and workshopping in real time, and then having other activities and a really beautiful space that is right in the middle of nature to get away from the city, sound baths, different practices. So yeah, bringing in a number of different experts and practitioners in their field, not just me, for that. So that's going to be a really exciting thing that we're doing for probably spring, summer 2026.
That's amazing. I
Yeah.
can't wait to see that. Yeah, it's amazing. So much. You're so busy. I don't know how you do it. It's been incredible. Before we can tell people how they can follow you and or learn more about your work, I always ask this last question before at the end of the interview, and that's what do you want to be when you grow up?
I love that question so much. And, I thought about it a lot. And I would say it's not what do I want to be when I grow up, but it's who I want to
Yes.
be when I grow up.
Oh.
And the who I want to be is someone that continues to live with a soft voice and a strong heart, with joy, with love, and following my alignment. And I want to be someone that helps to spark change in other people as a catalyst, that they can also live a life of joy and alignment and connection with the people that matter most to them. And that's the best legacy that we can leave for anyone. So that's what I want to continue doing.
That's awesome. I love that question for that same reason. It's just you never get the same answer. And it goes along this line of I forget who said that, but they say if you know what you want to be, you will become it. But if you don't
Yeah.
know what you want to be, you can be anything. So that's what
Yes.
I like. It's like, who do I want to be? And you
Yes.
know, I love that. That's wonderful. Thank you for sharing. I love it.
My pleasure. It's always so nice to have our conversations.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, I love that one, and I still think it's been years now since that little girl interviewed me, and I'm thinking I should change it, but no, I still love asking it. The reaction is so different from one person to the next, so
Yeah.
and it keeps us thinking. Okay, we're still growing, we're still evolving. So what's next? You know,
Yeah.
it's wonderful. So how can people follow you, contact you, reach you if they want to know more or work with you and where to get your book. Can you share that with us?
Yeah. Yeah, so my book is in Barnes and Noble as well as Amazon. We are working on getting it into more distribution networks and more bookstores. So eventually, it will be available in a much larger distribution network. I am on a lot of social channels, and my alias or my handle is Vivian Meraki at Vivian Meraki, VivianMeraki. I'm on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok. There's one more I'm forgetting.
LinkedIn as well. Yeah.
LinkedIn. Yeah. So I'm across those channels. And also it's vivianmeraki.com is my website. Or you can go to unshakableparenting.com. It'll bring you specifically to that program if that's the one that you're interested in. But yeah, reach out on any channel, follow me, send me a message. Would love to connect.
That's awesome. And I'll put all of that information in the description box so that people can follow you. I don't expect everybody to remember. They can just refer to it. And so that's amazing. Thank you so much, Vivian, for joining me today. I think, like I said, this is we could talk about this for much longer, but love to have you back on another time so that we could keep going. And
We'd love to.
yeah, it's wonderful. And I invite everybody to get that book. Like you said, it's not just necessarily for separation ever, but any kind of loss, grief. Those skills are transferable, so I think it's wonderful. Thank you. Is there anything else you want to add before we go, or are you?
Oh, it's just been such a great conversation. I really appreciate it. And I would say to anyone who is out there listening, that if you feel a whisper, you feel a nudge that there's something that you want to do, take just one small step towards it, and you'll never know where you end up. So that I would encourage you to follow. Yeah.
I love that. It's so true. I mean, we've taken those small steps, and I couldn't imagine everything that happened since. So I love that. Thank you again for joining me, and for everybody watching or listening. Don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening or watching from. Don't forget to go and follow Vivian as well and get her book. And until next time, stay safe, stay awesome, and we'll talk soon.